Blog Talk Radio.
Having a great week so far, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. It's been a good week.
That TBGIF.
What's that? The T what GIF?
That TBGIF.
I don't know what that stands for.
Thank bloody God it's Friday.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, thank God. Yeah. That's the English version. Oh my gosh! Yeah, I'm telling you, what a week! Halloween is over, and I'm exhausted. I'm only kidding. I really, but Halloween is over. Oh, damn! It's kind of like a letdown after all of that's finished, and we get our weekend. Some people would say, "Oh, thank God they're done with it." But see, I think it's wonderful. So on that note, Thanksgiving's coming. You got to do Thanksgiving. And then Christmas. Then we get our week at Christmas, and like we do every year. So I look forward to that again. The end of the year is kind of like a little bit of a busy time for us. So that being said, hi, Pam. You're so quiet there. I don't know.
Well, I didn't actually hear the unmute. So, and I was waiting for that or for you to say something. So hi, Dean. Hi, Rex.
Hi, something.
Yeah. Christmas is on a Monday.
Yes, it's on Lou's Day. Christmas is on a Monday.
That's
it's a Lou's
right.
Day.
Right.
Yeah.
Christmas
so Lou,
week is almost as fun as Halloween week.
And Lou gets to play Mrs. Claus this year. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah, she has to pass out cookies for everybody.
Yeah. There you go. I think I'm going to be the bad elf. What's that, cookies?
Cow patty cookies? Nah, I'll pass.
Oh, no. Lou wouldn't hand those out. Lou wouldn't hand those out. The naughty elves would, but not Lou. Yeah. So, I don't know. But, yeah, there's something to think about, all those fun things. We all know what I'm doing anyway. That's a standard every year. But anyway, yeah, it's Friday. So how are you two doing? Doing all right?
Yeah. I'm doing great.
Good. Very good. Very good. I took a nap and it wasn't long enough. They never are anymore. They never, ever are anymore. Excuse me. I can't help but yawn. It's awful. But, yeah, so we got a board full of poetry for tonight. It looks like a nice board. And I think it'll be some fun. And I see, what do we have? I know we have Northern Phoenix in the room. Oh, and hello, Darkened Auras. It's always good to have you as well. And very cool. Very cool. So it'll be a nice night, I think, anyhow. That's my opinion. We all know opinions are like noses. Everybody has one and they all smell.
That happens to be one of those opinions that I actually agree with. So there you go.
Yep.
It must be true.
There you go. Because Pam and I both believe it. Oh, very nice. Northern Phoenix said she's going to call in. Well, that'll be a delight.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. I like it. I guess the party started, and then we'll figure out if we have time for me to run my mouth later on. So I'm going to start out with a carryover from 2 weeks ago, which I didn't realize we had until we got near the end. Hello, Teresa. How are you tonight? And Rex, I'm going to ask you to read this one. It's called Does the Wine Still Taste the Same by Nuno Cardoso. So if you would be so kind.
Okie dokie. Does the Wine Still Taste the Same? By Nuno Cardoso. Assist me to seize the throne. Make room beside and seat the thorns. Crown me with a sword around your finger. Let me shield you with coverture and rose water's covenant of tomorrow. El Paso, salsa seasoned tacos, tucked in tortillas. Mexican gin dandy, female hands so soft. Joke down encounters their own spit. Stood up, Masiera brandy pours that bloom. Desert flowers in the ashen gardens of smoke. Children rejoice in a stranger's arms, eased by the idioms of a foreign tongue. Crafted in the Portuguese discovery dock, as the World Wide Web picks up the phone, Sue becomes the gray of their mother. In this wine cellar rests a heart-shaped cask. Take off the lid. Sip it with the slightest of kisses. Taste the grapes that ferment on forevermore. Darling, smell the red that you get drunk on. Does the wine still taste like Feed Me More? And boom.
Nice read, Rex.
All right.
Nice read.
Come on in.
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. This is absolutely beautiful. And I'm guessing from the things that he's saying within his poem, that this must be about the time that he got to visit Hope in Texas. And I really like this. I mean, what a beautiful heartfelt write on new discoveries seasoned with love. And, you know, it's interesting how small, like cultural differences, you know, and language differences, you know, can bring humor to a situation. And I just really like these lines. Children rejoice in a stranger's arms, eased by the idioms of a foreign tongue crafted in the Portuguese discovery docks, as the World Wide Web picks up the phone, food becomes the gray of their mother. In this wine cellar rests the heart-shaped cask. Take off the lid, sip it with the slightest of kisses. Taste the grape that ferment on forever. Honestly, this is beautiful, right, all the way through. But it's a treat for all the senses. And within his imagery, I feel like there's this outpouring of affection. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
That's me. I love this piece by Nuno. I really did. Wonderful lines and stanzas in the right. Most excellent job, I thought. And I'm with Pam. I picked those two same exact stanzas there. I thought they were wonderful. What a great way of putting it. Children rejoice in the stranger's arms. When he met, he didn't just meet Hope. He met her and her children. And I love this line here. Let me see where it begins. As the World Wide Web picks up the phone, Sooth becomes the gray of their mother. She worries, and when she hears his voice, she's calmed and she's more relaxed. And I think it was just fabulous. So excellent job, Nuno. And I want to thank you for sharing. And I'm sorry it took us 2 weeks to get to you. But if I had known this was on the board that week, I'd have figured it out. So apologies on that. But wonderful job. Very well done. Yeah.
Absolutely. That opening stanza was a nice touch, too. Assist me to seize the throne. Make room beside the seat of thorns. Crown me with a sword around your finger. Let me shield you with coverture and Rosewater's covenant until tomorrow. It's a nightly stanza, so to speak. The thought of being knighted with the sword around your finger, and let me shield you with coverture and Rosewater's covenant of tomorrow. Almost an intonation of blessing, so to speak. And that second stanza was nice with the touch of the El Paso salsa seasons of tacos, tucked in tortillas, the Mexican Jim Dandy female hand so soft. The joke down in campus where poems fit. Stood up in the syrup brandy, poured that bloom, dead the flowers in the ashen gardens of smoke. There's warmth in that stanza. And the third one alludes to familiarity, the foreign tongue, Portuguese, the World Wide Web, and that note in the last line, Sue becomes the gray of their mother. And then the finish is that almost a toast to the evening, so to speak. Does the wine still taste like feed me more? The note to what has been blooming. So, actually, God knew it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great piece. Nuno and Hope have a great way of writing together and separate. They both have their feet on the floor, and what they speak is basically exactly what they mean. They just put it out there a little differently, but it's very down to earth. Yes. Pam, I'm going to put this next piece up for you, and this is called Suicidal Depression Remake by Darkened Auras. One is in an aquarium, though. I can hear the bubbles.
No,
yeah.
That's a mini fridge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought maybe this is a treasure chest. Okay, I'm going to be quiet. Sorry, Pam. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. Suicidal Depression Remake by Darkened Auras. Grunge music blares from her room as she rolls her eyes and flops on the bed. Concerning voices of mom and dad ring out. They wonder what goes on in her head. The next day she walks into the house, eyes dilated from the cocaine. You're grounded, yelled her father. Doing drugs at school, are you insane? She rushed into her bedroom, slammed the doors and made the walls shake, blast her volume to the limit. Relating to the lyrics, letting her mind break. She can't remember the last time she was happy. She spins the blade, thinking through the years. The sharpness dances slowly upon her wrist. bringing to the surface much needed tears. She doesn't want to exist anymore. What is there to live for anyway? Nothing can take away the betrayal or the pain inside she felt today. Out behind the bleachers, she witnessed all of this, her best friend and her boyfriend sharing a lustful kiss. She can't understand how they could do this. She stains her pillow with many tears. She'll never forget or forgive them without always having more fears. She's been claimed by a monster of the mental kind, freed herself from the mortal realm, and left all her pain behind. End poem.
Nice read.
Great read, Dan. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Wow. What a hard-hitting piece this is, you know. She rushed into her bedroom, slammed the doors, and made the walls shake. Blast her volume to the limit, relating to the lyrics, letting her mind break. She can't remember the last time she was happy. She spins the blade, thinking through the years. The sharpness dances slowly upon her wrist, bringing to the surface much-needed tears. It's a painful piece. You know, be it real or be it created, it still hits that nerve. You know, of reality. And sadly, there's a lot of people that live that reality. And sadder yet, some of them don't live, you know. So excellent piece, Dark and Doris. Great lines, you know, throughout. And I think you made the point very well. So excellent job.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. All right, Dan, well, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, this was beautiful and powerful. I think, as Jean was mentioning, it is a very relatable tale to many, you know, survivors of suicide, or, you know, people who knew people who died of suicide. And I think, though this obviously appears to be a made-up tale, it's not made up to a certain point, because this is many people's reality as they deal with depression and try to understand, you know, the heartbreak of life, especially in the teen years, which can be quite tumultuous. I think that's the word I'm looking for, something like that. Hectic, I guess, would be a better word for me to say. You know, I really thought this was wonderful all the way through, but what especially hit hard is she can't remember the last time she was happy. She spins the blade, thinking through the years. The sharpness dances slowly upon her wrist, bringing to the surface much-needed tears. Just amazing lines and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I think the biteness is the duality of that betrayal, because she's left with no one to talk. Can't talk to her parents about it. Can't talk to her best friend, because she's part of the raucous feelings that are rolling and roiling now. And that second stanza with the cocaine angle, that's from one step down that ladder of trying to at least feel something besides the pain, yet it's not helping out, neither is the music. And the thought of the knife itself, and the sharpness dancing upon a wrist, bringing to the surface much-needed tears. You can actually angle that as those tears are red in the moment and reality strikes, or you can hit on the idea of the pain that draws out tears to help her flush. So the back end of this, she's been claimed by a monster of the mental kind, freed herself from the mortal realm, and left all her pain behind. So that could be the back end of things, actually going as far as offering up the finality in tears in red, so to speak, or the metaphor of moving on past the betrayal from both. Nicely done, Christina.
Okay. Well, hello, Robbie's Poetry. Welcome to the party. Let me see. Nope, no Northern Phoenix yet. Okay. Next piece I'm going to put up is called Final Guard, Poetry Accident. And just so everybody knows, we do have a sprinkling of Halloween floating through here, so it's not quite over yet. Oh, my goodness. Okay, this is called Final Garb by Poetry Accident. Knots tied at either end, a body set to descend from the bed where they lay, lowered down into the grave. The corporeal is concealed. What once lived has deceased. Humanity's visage, no longer viewed, as the bedsheet is now debuted. A final garb of mystery, hiding terrors that none should see. Corruption cloaked to protect the innocent from death's effect. Now the haunting may proceed, with the death shroud as to intercede between the living and the dead, not yet willing to cut their thread. Restless souls without a face, once regarded with distaste, are now our comedy on flickering screens, evoking laughs instead of screams. Beware, feral traveler of life's expanse, with the deceased take no chance. What lays beneath the sheet's cavity should stay hidden for sanity. End quote.
Nice. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I like this one. I like this one a lot. It has a wonderful, like, it's dark, but it's got a subtle, mysterious darkness. Like, I think it touches more on a reality of ghosts, although, you know, I know that sounds weird to say, but, you know, this isn't a cutesy write, and yet at the same time, it's not a slasher type write. And I like how she speaks of the sheet as that final garb, a final garb of mystery, hiding terrors that none should see, corruption cloaked to protect the innocent from death's effect. Now the haunting may proceed with death shroud to intercede between the living and the dead, not yet willing to cut their thread. And I really like the rhyme in this, and I also really liked how she speaks on the idea with the line, not yet willing to cut their thread, of those spirits that have something holding them back from moving on to the next realm. And I also like how she speaks in her poem, she writes in her poem about how we need that sheet, because the reality of death, is too terrifying to look upon. You know, though I think probably in centuries past, people were probably more accepting. They might not have known scientifically as much as we do, but they were probably more accepting that death was a natural part of life, because, you know, the mortality rate for infants, for mothers, and people in general was a lot higher. But, I really like this one. I thought it was thoughtful and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Jane, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this was nicely penned. Good rhymes throughout. I was looking at the stanza that Pam took, but Pam took it. So I moved down one.
Well, gosh darn her.
I know. That's the way her is, I'm telling you. But no, restless souls without a face, guarded with distaste. Humanity of flickering screens, evoking laughs instead of screams. Beware for a traveler of life's expanse, with the deceased take no chance. What lays beneath the sheet's cavity should stay hidden for sanity. And I thought that was another good one, because at one point everybody was afraid of ghosts. Everything was scary. Everything was is horror, you know. And now it's, you know, ghosts are made to be funny all the time now. I thought that was kind of true all the way around. And then, yes. Lays beneath the sheet's cavity should stay hidden for sanity. Yeah, I don't think I want to really know what's under there. Really, you know, I don't think I want to know. Because it could be any number of things. Like, I don't think I want to know. But I think there's some truth in that, too. Like, yep, don't want to know. Keep it covered. It's all right. Some of the best things in life should stay covered. But I was going to make a comment, but I'll refrain now. Where was this? Around the top, weekly on the bottom, blah, 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 a couple eyeballs, eye holes. Entertainment media like Casper, Guest, Ghost, as Figures of Fun, The Ancient Truth is more terrifying. And I think that was kind of well hit on, you know, here. Because even though that we make it fun and all laughs and games and stuff, that the true history that we're all, well, some of us, they're old enough to remember. You know, ghosts were never anything to laugh at until Casper came around. Then things changed. But anyway, great job, and thank you for sharing very much Poetry Accident.
Nice. Hey, I'll start with that opening line, not tied at either end. That offers up an ancient note to it, where you replaced in the shroud, you wrapped, and then it was tied at both ends before it was lowered into the grave. The angle there, they weren't making coffins at the time. It was just a means to an end. And the note of the shroud itself, with the death shroud to intercede, it's that idea of keeping what is now away from what once was, so you remember what once was instead of what you see now, that visage of death. Because once death intercedes, corruption does take place. And she offers up that note, corruption cloaked to protect the innocent from death's effect. That is duality in that, as she rolls into that last stanza, from comrade flickering screens, evoking laughs instead of screams. Beware, fair traveler of life's expanse, with deceased take no chance. What lays beneath the sheet's cavity should stay hidden for sanity. The idea of that corruption being released in a manner so that you can actually view reality as it is, past the note of real corruption from death, or both the corruption in death and the corruption that you can witness within that death, because they were corrupted to begin with. It's a duality in that note. I like that.
Yep.
And mostly by Poetry Accident.
Absolutely. Now, Rex, the next one I have put up for you, and this is called A Slow Death of Historical Documents by Daniel Dishino.
Okay. A Slow Death of Historical Documents by Daniel Dishino. I have learned to stop and pay attention in this next image up, hypnotic land of confusion. There is truth in the angry newsreel hypocrisy. There are facts hidden in the untangled information web, and despite his fight with mob mentality, those the rest and I searching. Modern sight is an unfocused blur, with each pixel just an introduction to the next. Hearing is the white noise of a crowd to block out the world, as each word in a mob is rarely untangled, and the nerves of the hypnotized are as numb as calloused fingers scrolling with relentless fury. What is next to bury? What was? And on. All right, Gene. It's right up your alley. Brief.
On my alley. Wait a minute.
Brief.
Oh, it was really up my alley. Brief, I would have read it. Now, silly, don't be silly. It's too many lines for me.
That would be micro brief.
Right. That's me. You know, I thought this is a great piece as you were reading it. I was trying to line up my stanzas. See, Pam didn't go first. She screwed me up because now I can have any ones I want. Just saying.
Well, that's a change of pace.
No, I'm not. I'm just going to do it. It's very bad. Modern sight is an unfocused blur with each pixel, just an introduction to the next. Hearing is the white noise of the crowd to block out the world, as each word in a mob is rarely untangled. And the nerves of the hypnotized are as numb as calloused fingers scrolling with relentless fury. What is next to bury? What? I don't know. I think it was really good. Dan usually has longer work, which I think, you know, kind of maybe where you were getting what you were getting at there, Rex. Just say it. But he always states things well. You know, he has a take on things that is pretty straightforward. And I think that this is no exception to that. I think it was well done, well written, and, you know, nicely written. So good job. And thank you for sharing, Dan. Much appreciate it.
Nice. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, up to you.
I like this. I like this a lot. The slow death of historical documents. It is so difficult now to shift through the lies and the truth because there's so much out there. We've gotten to a point where media is no longer, news is no longer about reporting. It's about expressing your individual opinion. And, you know, to me, this speaks on, you know, as he mentions, the pixels and the mob mentality. It really speaks on Facebook and other social media where you're bombarded with the modern times bombards us with this huge amount of information and pseudo information to the point where it can be overwhelming to look at it all, to take it all in. Modern sight is an unfocused blur with each pixel, just an introduction to the next. Hearing is the white noise of a crowd to block out the world as each new word in a mob is rarely untangled. Yeah, I really like that. I think it's a wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. It's funny because I just came across something today to the effect of, what was it, one of those, HBO, I think it was. One of those sites, HBO or one of those units putting out movies, television, all the other crap. It came out in an article that the president of the company was using bots on because of an article that came out about one of the shows they were doing that wasn't very pleasant. So they've been used between him and his chief executive officer. They were using bots online to countermand the article referring to this particular show that they were doing. It's called Perry Mason, The Early Days, I guess. And it didn't get a very good review from Rolling Stone. And they were digging in on this report. So it goes back to that idea of too many fingers swirling the broth in their own favor rather than taking the criticism that might be due, may not be due, it doesn't really matter, and doing something with it instead of lashing back and telling everybody to bugger off, this is a great show, and we'll do as we please. Because clearly, if people are complaining, then you're not putting out a good product. And if you're not putting out a good product, then you're putting out shite, and then nobody's going to watch it. So it goes down to the same idea as what everybody else is putting out, from Face Fart to Ogle to the churlish neo-necromancers, the masturbatory snobs and chronic brain committee, and all the other news outlets, the garbage. Nobody's listening. And those that they do have left captured are not wanting to get out of that ostrich in the sand moment because they don't really want to see what's going on because it breaks their illusion of what is real. And sanity-wise, they can't handle it.
Amen to that.
Nicely done, Daniel.
Okay, guys. Great comments. Pam, I'm going to come around to you for this next one. It's called Ghostly Beats by Poetically Written. Whenever you're ready.
Ghostly Beats. I like that title. By Poetically Written. He's mixing up some ghostly beats, a different heat he brought the treat. He's quick to serve some sweets to eat, and that's a hint to hit repeat. He's ghostly white, that's kind of pale. He's fast as light to story tell. He's not the ghost that comes from hell. That guy's the ghost with record sells. The kind of ghost that's number one, you'll never see his sheet undone. He's quick to mix and have some fun, but still to see, dream and run. We're driving now, he's in his lane, the signal's on for lane to change. We start to swerve, but who's to blame? He's giving shouts to y'all by name. We're breaking chat to picture frame. The ghostly tune remains the same. I guess we'll play the finger game. The point, we swerve because of the rain. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what do you think?
I say happy Halloween. I think this was a great take on the image prompt. I was wondering if anybody would grab that one when I put it up. He's mixing up some ghostly beats, a different heat. He brought the treats. He's quick to serve some sweets to eat, and that's a hint to hit repeat. He's ghostly white, and that's kind of pale. He's fast as light to storytell. He's not the ghost that comes from hell. That guy's the ghost with record sales. I don't know. I thought it was clever. I thought it was fun. You know, down here in the last two stanzas, it seems to get a little bit more serious, but I really liked the way it started out. And it was nice work, and thank you for sharing with us poetically written. Nice job.
Thank you, Dean. All right, Pam. Mm-hmm.
I like this one, too. Did I ever tell you, Dean, because your pictures, these prompts you may think of, did I ever tell you about when my Aunt Hetty dressed up in a ghost sheet when me and my sister were kids?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So me and my sister were spending the night at Aunt Hetty's, and we were staying up and yakking, and she decided, because, you know, she's only like 11 years older than me, so she was the cool young aunt. So she decided she was going to put on a ghost sheet with the eye hole and you know, peek around the corner and make noises like boo and scare us. Well, me and my sister started whispering to each other, and I was like, is that a ghost? And my sister was, I think it is. And I said, okay, here's what we need to do. Say hello to it. And if it's Aunt Hetty, she'll say hello back. And if it's not Aunt Hetty, we'll know because it'll make ghost sounds. And my sister started open her mouth, and I went, no, wait. Don't say hi to it, because what if it's not Aunt Hetty? And at that point, my aunt just broke out laughing.
That was it, huh? Oh my
God. Was about like 9, and my sister was like 5 or something like that, or 6.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, my aunt broke out laughing, listening to it, and oh yeah, that was the end of it. And she even as I got to be an adult, she'd repeat that story, and she goes, "It just cracked me up. You trying to be so reasonable, trying to figure out how to approach this ghost."
I can just imagine that, though. I can just imagine that. You know, two young kids, and they're like, "Wait, let's do this. No, no, wait, maybe not." I can imagine that whole world thing transfer. Oh my gosh! Yeah, I bet you that is a good laugh for her. Excellent.
It was good laugh and good memory. And but yeah, I really liked this one. I was glad to see someone took that picture. The rhyme and flow is great. You know, I was, you know, half expecting it'd be like break out into rap, you know, or something like that. But I it was fun. It was fun. And then there was kind of a little bit of a dark twist at the end. You know, with the we're breaking chat to picture frame. The ghostly tune remains the same. I guess we'll play the finger game. The point, we swerve because the rain. And it almost makes you think that they were the ones that killed the ghost, because the idea of the chat and picture frame is the idea of, you know, texting and taking selfies on the phone while driving, you know, being distracted. And so there is that slightly dark turn. But for the most part, I thought this was really clever wordplay. You know, especially the kind of ghost that's number one, you'll never see his sheet undone. He's quick to mix and have some fun, but still to see you scream and run. You know, right there, it kind of captures the fun you see within the picture prompt. So great writing, really well done.
Nice. It does offer up, yes, he's the party spook, because, you know, he's not the one necessarily coming out to do the chant from hell and all that. He relies on you to take the notice when it's time to scream and run. But that second last stanza We're driving now. He's in his lane. The signal is on for lane to change. We start to swerve, but who's to blame? He's giving shout to y'all by name. So there's an intonation there that we swerve because of the rain, yet maybe he didn't get the swerve because he got driven into the tree.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The thing on the back end is, I guess we'll play the finger game. The point being, it's not our fault. We didn't do it. He didn't touch us. But
right.
A little bit of implicity or implication there on, we had a little bit of notes in his demise.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, sorry about that. I kind of had a moment in the Twilight Zone. Okay, this next piece I'm going to put up is called Puppet Girl by Teresa Streshenkov. I'm going to give that one a read. So here I go. Okie dokie. Free yourself from that mental demon. Forgive yourself from your painful past. And know that this pain will not last. When you let it all go, the pain goes away fast. Living in a world like Pinocchio, lying every day just to get through. My nose keeps on growing. Longer it grew. I just wanted to be a real girl again. I can't wait to be free and finally breathe. Get you out of my memory, forgetting all the complete control I let you obtain over me. End poem.
Great reading.
Oh,
thank you.
This is a collaboration with Maeve Edmondson. I just want to make sure I said that.
Absolutely.
I didn't realize. Mm-hmm.
Very nice read. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
It's a great collaboration. It flows really nice, and each stanza has something to offer up. I really like how this speaks to me on what it feels like to have your thoughts controlled by someone whose memory you can't let go of. And I thought it was an excellent collaboration. I really like what it says in the beginning, free yourself from that mental demon, forgive yourself from your painful past. Now, I think oftentimes it's when we have a painful past, it is difficult to forgive ourselves. I also really like that they gave a twist to Pinocchio and it says, I just want to be a real girl again. You know, that idea that between your own choices, your own actions, that you've started to feel this kind of emptiness and this idea that you have no control over your own life because you're nothing more than that puppet on a string. So great brevity and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. All right, Jean, back to you. What do you think?
Okay, well, I thought this was really well done by the ladies. Well-expressed desire to escape a bad relationship. Nothing worse than being controlled. I can't wait to be free and finally breathe and get you out of my memory, forgetting all the complete control I let you obtain over me. So it was a great share for tonight. And thanks, ladies, and great job.
Yep. It hits on that note, that first stanza, the baggage one carries around with them. The second one walks into that note. All the lies you have to tell and remember in order to elude yourself to past the baggage that you still carry. But, and that final stanza does offer up that note of infinality of getting rid of that baggage, if nothing else, but peace of mind, as well as having the freedom to breathe in mentality once more. So, nicely done, ladies. All right, Jean, we're back at
I'm going to come back to you. This is The Theater of Shame by Robert M. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
Oh, no.
Okay, that's it.
Sorry about that.
The Theater of Shame, version 2 by Robert M. In order to accurately display this worn visage, there are a few things that must be done. Firstly,
reach deep into a child's mind and purge all of his innocence. Assure him that he is confined to a lifetime of penitence. Now that the canvas has been set upon the reluctant frame, take some pain mixed with regret and stir in a little shame. Before your brush meets its stroke upon the tainted sheet, let the canvas solely see, soak in the tears of self-defeat. The sheet, now stained and prepped, it is time to add the paint. Tune out the woes that went long wept, and ignore the grievous plaint. Let us start with light brown eyes, and add tiny flecks of gold, golden flecks of his dream's demise, and tragedies left untold. Time for the curvature of the nose, and to add the permanent scowl. Trace down where the teardrop flows, and meets the placid jowl. Add some cracks to his barren lips, and some rugged facial hair. Smudge the dark with fingertips, and make the nostrils flare. Lastly, let us add some detail to the weary signature crown, and upon the head leave a trail as of coal and raven down. Finally, it has been completed. What a sinister composition. Behold the aspect of the defeated, the patron of the human condition. And poems. Okay. All right, Gene, you get first take. Maybe. If you unmute.
Trace is mute. My grandson just came in here and caused a ruckus.
Oh. You want me to
yes.
Come back to you? Okay. Pam.
Yes, I thought this was wonderful. First of all, Rex, you did a great read of it. I like how he focuses in on a creation story. And you think of the idea of the cruelty of life and how some people seem to be destined for sadness, destined for defeat. And the narrative of this is I think quite brilliant. It really hits hard. It's to me, he created a work of dark art with his words. I would have to say that, the second and third stanza I did especially like, now that the canvas has been set upon the reluctant frame, take some pain mixed with regret and stir in a little shame. Before you brush, your brush meets its stroke upon the tainted sheet, let the canvas solely soak in the tears of self-defeat. The detail, the attention to detail, and add some cracks to his barren lips and some rugged facial hair, smudge the dark with fingertips and make the nostrils flare. And all the way through, it's not just about the physical composition, but rather the composition of the soul, which feels both defeated and broken. So wonderful emotive dark right and very well done.
All right, thank you. Jean, you ready?
Yeah, I'm as ready as I'll ever be. This piece by Robert is really a harsh right. It's basically, I'll make sure I say it right so I sound like an idiot, the theater of shame. In order to accurately display this worn visage, there are a few things that must be done. This is a listing of things that basically a recipe for how to ruin a child, how to destroy the innocence and the disposition or. I'm not sure. I'd love to come up with another word, but I just can't do that off the top of my head. Firstly, reach deep into a child's mind and purge all of his innocence. Assure him that he is confined to a lifetime of penitence. And each stanza adds to that with its thoughts. Let us start with light brown eyes and add tiny specks of gold, golden flecks of his dreams, demise, the tragedies left untold. Time for the curvature of the nose, and to add the permanent scowl. Trace down where the teardrop flows amidst the flaccid jowl. It's an amazing tale, and it's heartbreaking. It really is. And then, you know, we got lastly, let us add some detail to this, to the weary signature frown. I'm not reading all of it, you know, and then finally it has been completed. What a sinister composition. Behold the aspect of the defeated, the patron of the human condition. It's a sad, sad, harsh piece. And, you know, Robert says he put a lot of himself in here. And if you look, it was for the contest, self-portrait. And, you know, that makes it more sad and more painful. And, but it was an excellent job. You know, Robert always knows how to put his thoughts to words in a very fluid manner. So great job, Robert. And thank you for sharing with us.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. I got two thoughts that come to mind. Theatre des Vampires, because of the theater of shame and the unfolding horrors that come with it. But also, you do this as accurately as you described it, and what you end up with is that the real picture of Dorian Gray, the ugliness and putridity that lies within because of what you've done from the outset in making that picture whole and real in your mind's eye. And that's wickedly sinister and outright evil. So, great description there, Robert. Thank you very much. Oh,
okay.
I see. We're back at the room.
Okie dokie. Let me. Okay, he's singing. We got him singing.
Yeah. He must have joy down in his heart. Because he's singing for no reason.
Family.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, Rex. Oh, no. Wait a minute. Pam, this one's for you. What the hell I was going to do? Okay, this is called Celebrating 11 Years of Your Life and More to Come by Jenny the Deep.
You were in my womb for 9 months. Now you're 11 and full of spunk. Our little girl you used to be, now growing up to be a lovely young lady. To the moon and back for eternity. I'll love you no matter our ups and downs. My love is true. From dusk to dawn, I'm your mother, and you'll always be my world, my daughter. As long as the stars above keep shining bright and the sun keeps rising after a long night, I'm here for you here on earth or celestially. My love for you will always be unconditionally. End poem.
Great, great, Dan. Thank you very much. And Jean, here you go, short and sweet, and deliver it.
I'm here, yep. I think that it was, what's up with you in the short and sweet thing? I've been good. I think this was a wonderful dedication to her daughter, you know, 11 years. That's a great birthday. That's still a little bit innocent age before they make that turn. Right, Pam?
It's borderline. Like, I remember my kids having a whole lot of sass at 11. But
Pam, the apples don't fall far from the tree.
That was very true.
Too funny. Yeah, but I think it was a great piece. You were in my womb for 9 months. Now you're 11 and full of spunk. Our little girl you used to be, now growing up to be a lovely young lady. I think that It's a great little tribute piece. Now, I'm sure her daughter will love this. I like the ending there. As long as the stars above keep shining bright and the sun keeps rising after a long night, I'm here for you, here on Earth, or celestially. My love for you will always be unconditionally. Beautiful piece. And great job, Jenny. Nice work.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, you read it.
Yes, this was a beautiful, heartfelt write. It is a wonderful tribute to her daughter, who I hope is having or had a just absolutely amazing 11th birthday. And I don't know, because I really feel like Jean stole my stanza, so I just don't know what to do now. but you know what? I will say I really like the line, no matter our ups or downs, my love is true. From dusk to dawn, I'm your mother. I like that because, you know, there can be times where you don't, you know, love the child's behavior, but you always love the child. And, you know, the idea that a mother is always on call. So great lines and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. Yeah, there are two lines that kind of say, now you're 11 and full of spunk. Yeah, there's an idea of yet what's to come, so to speak. And no matter how ups or downs, my love is true. So there is an understanding, being how mothers and daughters usually like to niggle at each other here and there, and sometimes for long periods. But still, I won't give up on you because you're mine, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I get it. Okay.
You certainly did.
Mm-hmm. 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 Let me see now. I had to figure out where I was. Because I'm bouncing all around. Okay, Rex. This one.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to go next. Silly me. I'm trying to skip myself. Okay, this is called In Between Fixings by Naomi Sarah. And I'm going to give it a read. If I can. A tired ragdoll pastes on her own clown makeup, falling apart at her seams, drowning in the cotton candy meltdown, pink and purple sweet vaporizing into air. And the smiling clown doll shakes with sobs. The broken clown doll screams. As silvery sunshine drops rise upward, leaning in gravity's despair, and erasers erode on leadless pencils, scribbling vowel-less words that stumble about, lost in her own fears. Stutters and pauses of syllables of chaos, echoing silent tears. Then stumbles in a poem unfettered, answering to the shattering cries, and verses unbound, like a bird on a tightrope. Finding solace in the whispers of the wind, and words fall into medium-sized dreams of somewhere in between. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Come on.
Yeah, this one is beautiful, and it has a powerful emotional impact with it. I like the structure of the poem, how she allows her lines to float back and forth. And I thought the idea of the fragile paper doll with the clown mask on was a great image and metaphor for the idea of not letting on how fragile you feel beneath, how you feel like any moment you could fall apart, you know, because you put on that smile, you put on that clown mask, that makeup that tells everybody that everything is okay, but underneath you're screaming. Vaporizing into air, and the smiling clown doll shakes with sobs. The broken clown doll screams as silvery sunshine drops rise upward. As silvery sunshine drops rise upward, leaning into gravity's despair, I really like the phrase gravity's despair, with the idea of feeling like everything in life is pulling you down and lost in their own fears and stutters and pauses of syllables of chaos, echoing silent tears. The idea of trying to find the right words to express the pain felt and trying, as it says, like a bird on tightrope, trying to balance life out and finding that to be an impossible task. So an amazing write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
I think this was a great piece by Naomi. I like the beginning of this. The tired rag doll pastes on her clown makeup, falling apart at her seams, drowning in a cotton candy meltdown, pink and purple sweet, vaporizing into air. And the smiling clown doll shakes with sobs. The broken clown doll screams. you paint on this artificial face for the world to see, but inside, you're still going through it, shaking with sobs and you feel broken inside. I can totally get that. So I think that it was really well expressed. I know. And Pam, like, she took all the lines, but I didn't want to go to the bottom one. I figured we'd leave that for someone with a little bit more, wisdom than I. But I think that it really was well done. Naomi has a way of expressing herself. So wonderful job, and thanks for sharing, Naomi.
Nice, thanks, Jean. I think it all falls to those last that last stanza in the last three, nine lines. The front half, the large one, hits on the idea of not being able to express, but then stumbles in a poem unfeathered, answering to the shattering cries and verses unbound like a bird on a tightrope. The ease in the note of letting it all out on paper and finding that solace in the moment, which allows her to speak. So I like that end of it too. So nicely done, Naomi. All right, Jean. Mm-hmm. We're back on you.
You don't get to. Okay. Let's see what I have. Yes. Now, here's the piece for Rex. See? Same piece? Okay, Rex, this one is for you to read, and this is called No Sympathy for the Bedeviled by Aloysius. Whenever you're ready.
No Sympathy for the Bedeviled by Aloysius. You know that urge beneath your skin that tangles with your mind, encrypting colors on a black and white screen and tasting like blood red wine? It comes up from deep inside of you as I crawl beneath your dreams and partition off your entrails like only an evil one could scheme, killing off your faith until your mind fails. You will never know me. I need not stay too long, but once I leave my hell print, you will only hear my song and find yourself hell-bent as I scream and blaspheme. No goblins hobbing, no shrieking ghosts, no violent bats, no tenured Democrats. They're all meek and mild compared to what I can do to an innocent child. I'm in the air, you breathe me in, and then you wonder why you sin. I live in church, I'm the first one there, and the last to leave. I kneel in every pew, just waiting for you. You are always on my mind. I am always in your mind. You need pay me no mind. You are mine. No need to remind. Yes, you know my name. It's that conscious game, lying deep within your soul, like a floating, wooing ghoul, out to take you home, to bloodlet and embalm every dripping thought and dream, to keep you tripping as you scream. Call my name in the middle of darkness. I am here to point out the pointlessness of your pathetic human existence without the need of any dramatics. Hear me croon how much I love you. See the pitter smatter of an evil smile. Let me take you on a pitchfork ride from where you will never disembark. Hear me croon how much I love you as you burn with all the infidels. A wreath of all your disbelief lies beneath all your grief, tattooed to your forehead for you to wear till then. Go and sin forevermore. I will open up that door to non-everlasting inhumanity and creeping infirmity, resolute but non-divinity. We'll call in each other's names with only you to shame and blame. Tell me, baby, what's my name? Tell me, Smeed, what's my name? No, this is no parlor game. And poem. And Aloysius took that off of the Sympathy for the Devil. So, all right, Pam.
I like this one. I think Aloysius would have fun writing for your current After Midnight prompt, Rex.
Yeah, it kind of walks on the same thing.
It does, doesn't it? It does, absolutely. I really like the voice offered up in this, and the title is clever, No Sympathy for the Bedevil, with the wordplay and references to the song Sympathy for the Devil. And I like how he speaks on the idea that the true monsters, the true devils are the hypocrisy, the hypocrites, and the evil that live within realms where children should feel and people should feel safe. Really strong lines, great take on the chosen prompt. I really like where he says at the end, tell me, baby, what's my name? Tell me, sweetie, what's my name? No, this is no parlor game. And call my name in the middle of darkness. I am here to point out the pointless of your pathetic human existence. Without the need of any dramatics, hear me croon how much I love you. See the pitter smatter of an evil smile. And whether you believe in a literal devil or simply that the devil is your own inner turmoil speaking to you, it does so often seem that those negative voices speak up at nighttime. But also it makes me think of the idea of people who are so willing to point fingers at other people's flaws or so-called sins when they're basically bathing in their own. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jean, how about you?
You know, wow. It was a great job with this dark rate, and it was dark. There's parts of it that kind of went, But you know that urge beneath your skin that tangles with your mind, encrypting colors on a black and white screen and tasting like blood red wine. It comes up from deep inside of you as I crawl beneath your dreams and partition off your entrails like only an evil one could scheme, killing off your face until your mind fails. You will never know me. I need not stay too long. For once I leave my hell print, you will only hear my song and find yourself hell-bent as I scream in blasphemy. Crazy piece. Like, there was a lot going on and a lot of darkness and a lot of well-written lines. I mean, really. I think that, it was a fine piece, and I'm glad that we didn't miss it because, you know, that wouldn't have been good. So well done, and thanks for sharing, Aloysius. Great take on that prompt. So nice job.
It was Sympathy for the Devil on the one hand, yet he's offered no sympathy for the bedeviled. Just a backhanded slap at the reality of what you're doing. You know that urge beneath your skin that tangles with your mind, encrypting colors on a black and white screen and tasting like blood red wine? It comes from deep inside of you as I crawl beneath your dreams and partition off your entrails like I was only an evil wanted scheme, killing off your faith until your mind fails. Nice. And I like that stands with no goblins hobbing or shrieking ghosts. Compared to what I can do with an innocent child, I'm in the air, you breathe me in, and then you wonder why you sin. There's a really hard note to depravity in that one. And then the note, I live in church. I'm the first one there and the last to leave. I kneel in every pew just waiting for you. That is a nice, tender note to other dealings going on. So this is not cryptic in its thoughts, and he's offering up that note. You might have sympathy for the devil himself, but there's not going to be any sympathy for you when it comes to the back end of things because you know better. You should be better. Yet.
Yeah.
You still want to play that game.
Right.
I think you can win.
Yeah. Not true, not true. Okay. Pam, I have the next one up for you. It's called Shapeshifting Parasites and Mannequin Martyrs. This is by Pam Ray.
All right. Sure, I'll read that, troublemaker. On garden paths, we inhale frothy scents of flowers blooming. Dark clouds gather where the masses consume the last beautiful words in a clockwork of broken halos. Skin begins melting from brittle bones of indifference. Muscle bends and eyes close in cliched habits of prayer and piety. As food rots, knees grind deep in the slipshod of mud tossed from rooftops, piss buckets worn like shawls of mannequin martyrs. Strip yourself of the indignity you have allowed yourself to become subject to. Truth reigns within marrow. It is meant to be spoken in a poet's savage tongue. We drown in waves of shape-shifting parasites where right and wrong has become a fashion statement of grand feathers and rubies chained to throats swallowing the flies. We suckle the fables that leak from the troll's teat, missing glorious opportunities to expand the universe within the wet clay. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Uncurl your toes and take a gander.
Well, my first line of my comment is, tell me what you really think. Oh, my God. Wow. Powerful lines and thoughts throughout, you know, I should say stanzas because it's really not about a line here or a line there. I kind of picked it up here. Strip yourself of the indignity you have allowed yourself to become subject to. Truth reigns within marrow. It is meant to be spoken in a poet's savage tongue. There you go. That's her line right there. We drown in waves of shape-shifting parasites where right and wrong has become a fashion statement of grand feathers and rubies chained to throats swallowing the flies. Excellent lines, Pam, all the way throughout that whole, well, the whole poem. But, this section that I grabbed up was pretty strong thoughts, but the whole thing was wonderful imagery, great expression of thoughts and emotions. Just an excellent job. So well done. And this is the one you did for that contest. Good luck in the contest. Look
well,
at
thank
everybody.
You.
She tossed
thank
one your
you,
way.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
let me know how you make out.
I sure will. I sure will. And either way, I just really always appreciate the inspiration offered up in contest. But it'll be interesting to see the different ways that people take the prompts.
Absolutely.
And thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say this is an add-on to No Sympathy for the Bedeviled. You're on those piss buckets, so carry them well, you hogwild morons. Piss boy, over here.
Oh, my God.
I remember that from, Mel Brooks' History of the World, Part 1, where he's calling for the piss boy. Me a piss boy. He gets half in the bucket and half on the piss boy, so he really is the piss boy, so to speak. Anyway.
Yep.
And then you cry at the fact that you're a martyr because you've been pissed on. Well, do something about it. Quit crying. There are other things. The thought of them was that strip yourself of the indignity you have allowed yourself to become subject to. Again, righteous tones to quit whining and do something that can make a change on that statement. Where right and wrong has become a fashion statement of grand feathers and rubies chained at throats swallowing the flies. Whoa. It's in a hierarchy. You suck. We want some. Well, earn it. Think of something. Build something. Invent something. Work for it. You can't get shit for free. It don't work that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Rex.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okie doke.
All right. Where are we going next?
The next piece I'm going to put up is called Lost Enamel by A.R. Mundo. And let me see. Clack, rotting the world's roots, its soft white enamel melting away. A gradual, a gradient, a change so soft you don't feel its erosion. Can't feel the crash of iceberg enamel as it chips and wears meal by meal. At times, we become aware, lick at the new shapes, the ragged check chasms. Yet we adjust, accepting the new normal, the new landscape of the once familiar. And even though we know we have been told, we know the future, we know our shame. Even though we know the sweet, so tempting, and so familiar. So we keep choosing it. Keep choosing the future toothache, the future heartbreak, the broken earth. End poem.
Yay, yeah, thank you very much. And we've come across a few like this lately. All right, Pam, what do you think?
I like this one. I thought it, you know, really worked well for an extended metaphor. I like how the poem itself and even the title speaks on the idea of grinding our teeth in, like, frustration or anxiety. Let's see. I mean, it's just one line leading into the next really makes a picture so complete that it's difficult to separate it. But I have to say that here, at times we become aware, look at the new shapes, like the ragged chasms, yet we adjust, accepting the new normal, the new landscape of the once familiar. And even though we know we have been told, we know the future, we know our shame. Taking a look at the idea of what we have created through our actions, through our choices, and the new ways of life carved out, you know, it just an amazing write, and it really is wrapped up nicely with the end lines, the future toothache, the future heartbreak, the broken earth, you know, like what are we leaving, what mess of cavities and rot and, you know, broken enamel that serves no purpose are we leaving behind for the next generation. Really thoughtful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
I thought this was an absolutely wonderful piece. I thought it was a great metaphor all the way through. You know, I mean, she hit on all the right spots. And it was well written. I was grabbing lines, but as Pam was going, I kept going back up to the top. So I'm going, okay, maybe I'll take these instead. Because she picked the good ones because they were all good. I was just looking for a great starting point. Plaque rotting the world's roots, its softest white enamel melting away. A gradual, a gradient, a change so soft you don't feel its erosion. Can't feel the crash of iceberg enamel as it chips and wears meal by meal. At times we become aware, look at the new shapes, the ragged chasms, yet we adjust, accepting the new normal, the new landscape of the once familiar. And even though we know, we have been told, we know the future, we know our shame. I think that she really did a great job highlighting the fact that we know what's happening and we don't change anything. We just keep on going. So you can watch things just erode, you know, the earth in general and in so many different facets of it, you know. So great job, Amy, and very well done piece. Nice work.
Absolutely. That iceberg was a nice analogy, the thought of the Titanic getting ripped apart and everything just sinking. And that note to, this is the new normal and the acceptance thereof, instead of saying, we can't have that new normal. It makes no sense. Do something with it and about it. Yes, the acceptance therein belies the fact that we are to blame, despite the fact that we might not be doing what brings about those things. We're letting those we put in office do those things on behalf of our names. So that makes us even more guilty because we continue putting them back. So I like that thought. Nicely done, Amy. Thank you very much. Go sit down.
No, I don't want to sit down.
Well, I just took you out.
No, you didn't take me anywhere. Don't let him fool you, everybody. He didn't take me anywhere. Anyway. I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like being stupid, and I do it so well. Anyway, Rex, this piece is for you. This is called Between Crescent and Sunrise by Sadra Chapman. So whenever you're ready.
Between Crescent and Sunrise by Sadra Chapman. Foamy brine meanders along the shoreline. With every step, sand squishes between my toes as each soul prints a familiar trail. How the ocean waves stir my senses, my mind, a silent orpheum waits to be filled by the symphony of your voice. Absent moments are ingrained in each passing of the tide, like the final breaths of a fading sun hanging on the heart of twilight. Blackness melds into mauve and scatters scintillate across the horizon. Its vast emptiness sucks the air from my lungs. Our thoughts entwine, dangles between the light of the crescent moon and tepid sunrise, each languished message dusted on opposite skies. I stare deep into the void, looking for sails to peek above the long, flat line, so I may touch your letter, close my eyes, inhale every syllable, hands locked, pattering to the sea, waiting on dusk and dawn, until the day we embrace again. And Paul, I think that's going to start with you, Gene.
You know, I really like this poem, and it probably sounds kind of strange, but when I got down here about, I stared deep into the void looking for sails to peek above the long flat line so I may touch your letter, close my eyes, and inhale every syllable. Something in that struck me as Pablo Neruda. There's something of Pablo Neruda's that I have read that takes me to that ship, a letter, the whole little 9 yards there. And I thought that was pretty cool that it brought that back to me. I just have to go find it now in my little stockpile of things that I keep. But I love that spot there. I like the whole poem all the way through, but look. Hands locked, pattering to the sea, waiting on dusk and dawn until the day we embrace again. That whole ending stanza was wonderful. And that's not taking anything away from the rest of it. I think that Cedar did a great job. He said that in this poem, he wanted to share a moment where the narrator is writing a love letter to somebody he's recently met, but lives very far away. I think he did that. I really think he did that. But yeah, great imagery, great thoughts throughout. I think it was really nicely expressed. And like I said, it took me to something I've read of Pablo Neruda's. So there's nothing bad about that in my mind. So excellent job. And thanks for sharing, Cedar. Yep.
Right. Nice. Thank you, Dean. Mm-hmm. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is beautiful. And I don't know Neruda's poetry as well as Gene does, but I do agree that it definitely has that vibe to it. And between crescent and sunrise, you know, those lonely hours of the night when you can't wait for the day so that you can, you know, reach out to that person you love, whether it's through your mail or phone or text or whatever it is. And I love the imagery in blackness melts into mauve and scatters scintillate across the horizon. Its vast emptiness sucks the air from my lungs. It's so emotionally charged in the way that it feels like those that time that you spend apart from the one that you love takes all that air out of your lungs. I really think he has hit the nail on the head when it comes to the prompt and the theme that he was writing on. And, you know, the idea of just wanting so desperately to be with somebody and to find the right words to express the love. And I like that he brings in the idea of writing a letter instead of saying, you know, text or email. It's about, you know, writing, so I may touch your letter, close my eyes, inhale every syllable. There isn't as much letter writing anymore. It's becoming a lost art form, you know, and so I just thought this was beautiful and very well done.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, thank you, Pam. I got to go to that second stanza. How the ocean waves stir my senses, my mind, a silent orpheum, waits to be filled by the symphony of your voice. Orpheum, a grand theater that echoes strong the note of sound. Hits that on the note with that stanza itself. And blackness melts into mauve and scatters scintillate across the horizon. Its vast emptiness sucks the air from my lungs. Again, that note of in the moment, and the one you read about, so I may touch your letter, close my eyes, inhale each every syllable, and rock pattering to the sea. We may meet once more. It's very well. So well done, Cedar. Thank you very much.
Okay. La 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 la. La 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 la. Okay. Next. Sugar honey iced tea. Forgot what I was doing. Okay. Pam,
Chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim-chim.
Okay. And all I have to do is find that room again. Okay, Pam, this one is for you whenever you are ready.
All right. Age is Only a Number by Rooster Cogburn. When I were a young lad, come hail, rain, or shine, the great outdoors, my playground, kicking ball, climbing trees, playing throw fetch with my dog, I tell ya, this, such carefree abandon beats all. And with this sound base from formative years, these ideals and virtues, now a mature guy, I carry my head high, look friend or foe in the eye, smile, I'll smile back. Frown, I'll just walk away. So if love you're seeking, I could fulfill your dreams. Let's get together, rendezvous in summer sun. I'll show you meadows green, butterflies, wildflowers. And if you smile, surely my heart you've won. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And something different from Rooster. I was expecting a funny. All right, Gene, what do you think?
You know, I like this piece. We just read this on the 26th of October because I'm like, that sounds so familiar. And I kind of went over and I looked. I'm like, yes, it does. I thought it was a great write by Rooster. Thoughts were well expressed. And with this sound base from my favorite formative years, honest ideals and virtues, now I'm a mature guy. I carry my head high, look friend or foe in the eye, smile, I'll smile back, frown, I'll just walk away. So if love you're seeking, I could fulfill your dreams. Let's get together, rendezvous in summer sun. I'll show you meadows, green butterflies, wildflowers. And if you smile, then surely my heart you've won. I just said nice imagery. I thought he did a nice job with this. And it was something very different for Rooster. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, what about you?
Yeah, this really was a nice write. Great rhyme and flow. I like how it speaks on the idea of those things that those lessons we learn in our youthful years can be turned, you know, carried into our more mature years. And where he says, and with this sound base from formative years, these ideals and virtues, now a mature guy, I carry my head high, look friend or foe in the eye, smile, I'll smile back, frown, I'll just walk away. And I think that's a wonderful thought on the idea of returning that smile or choosing to walk away if that frown or that negative attitude is offered up. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice, Pam. I think you hit the right note with that one. It is about growth and understanding and remembering the learned experiences. So that last stanza kind of shines in the moment as, hey, I am what I am because of what I have been through and learned from. Nicely done, Rooster. Thank you very much.
All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Jeez Louise.
You
telling
you.
Asleep? No, I wish. Nothing personal.
You've had one of them good gummies?
No. I have a grandson who's acting like an animal on the other end of the house. And there's nobody here except me. So he's pushing all my buttons. So when I get off of here, he's going to wish he hadn't met me today. So anyway, this story is called Ghost Stories by Paul Brott. Gorge enjoyed the ghostly tales read at night when Raven quails. Full moons to enhance the story, something scary, dark, and gory. They'd sit atop the owner's mantle, crickets, frogs, and all things chantful. Squealing sounds, dark poetry, crackling fire, perfect remedy. The stories told were dark and bold. The creatures loved each chapter. Ghosts and gorges and spots untold. Scary tales brought them laughter. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Oh, this is absolutely, a delightful rhyming poem. I always enjoy Paul Brott's poetry, but this one I feel has really captured the spirit of Halloween because, you know, I just love the idea of telling dark stories, gathering around perhaps the bonfire or even the you know, just inside and sharing dark tales. I like where he says, you know, read at night when Raven quails. I feel like Raven was, you know, a great nod to Edgar Allan Poe and his stories and his poem. And also squealing sounds, dark poetry, crackling fire, perfect remedy. You know, and scary tales brought him laughter. This is kind of right, that makes me smile because you can just imagine these ghosts and these gourds just gathering around and just having fun with scary stories. So very well done.
Boy, I'll roll this up with two things. The idea of, yes, Halloween, but it also points to fires in the woods when you're out camping and you're telling ghost tales. So the gourds he's offering up, enjoy the ghostly tale. And gourds not being literal, kind of a nice metaphor for kids, so to speak. And then he turns it on the back end, dark and gory, literally using the gourds again as a motif. I like that. The crickets, frogs, all things chantful, squealing sounds, dark poetry, crackling fire, perfect remedy. Again, that note to both angles, Halloween and campfire revelations. I like that. And the stories told were dark and bold. The creatures loved each chapter. Ghosts and gourds and spots untold. Scary tales brought them laughter. Usually, yes, but sometimes it scared the tar out of them too, which is a good thing. So, nicely done, Paul. Thank you very much. Back to you, Jane.
Yep. Okay. Rags, I'm bringing this one back to you. It's called Thinking Man by Francisco Del Mar. Whenever you're ready.
A Thinking Man by Francisco Del Mar. There are men that are born with talents they profit, and there are men that waste their talents in useless endeavors. What should be said about these men is that neither dares to care about the fate of the other. Whether one is more endowed with the treasures of life is merely coincidental, for a man that craves for brilliance is often the man that results successful. And what becomes of the man that wastes his life in the indulgence of impractical dreams? It becomes forgotten. Now, a man who has aspirations and can fulfill every idea of his ingenuity is a man to admire and to follow in his path. No man is entitled to the privilege of being a god, nor should he assume to be that of which he is not. How we choose to be treated is how we treat others in this world. There is nothing more despicable than the falsehood of one's probity. A man that demonstrates his knowledge with actions instead with mere words is a wise man that speaks with conviction. Seldom is life fair to the dreamers and those that seek to taste the impassioned fruit of triumph. A man who does not think for himself does not think at all. He merely lives in the shadow of his uncertainty and failures. End poem. All right, Pam, we're going to start with you.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Another wonderful Oscar Wilde piece by Frank. Deeply philosophical, great satire, looking at the idea of people who can't think for themselves, who'd rather live that frivolous and indulgent life than actually find meaning or purpose. Whether one is more endowed with the treasures of life is merely coincidental. For a man that craves for brilliance is often the man that results successful. And what becomes of a man that wastes his life in the indulgence of impractical dreams, he becomes forgotten. You know, we don't reach for those deeper aspirations, you know, the deeper meaning in life. We just end up fading away. So wonderful philosophical write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Sam.
All right, Jean, how about you? But you got to unmute first. Maybe.
You all missed my comment then. No, I'm kidding. yeah, I think that this was very well expressed by Frank. Great lines and thoughts throughout. And I enjoyed the piece very much. I think I'm just going to end up repeating everything Pam said. There are men that are born with talents they profit, and there are men that waste their talents in useless endeavors. What should be said about these men is that neither dares to care about the fate of the other. Whether one is more endowed with the treasures of life is merely coincidental. For a man that craves for brilliance is often a man that results successfully. And what becomes of the man that wastes his life in the indulgence of impractical dreams, he becomes forgotten. I think that, and that's only the part of it. You know, I mean, the whole thing was really well put together, and you know, I hate when I take part and I don't get the other part, and I always feel like, well, I'm only telling half the story here, but definitely a wonderful job by Frank. He does such a great job with these type of pieces that you know, exceptional work. So thanks, Frank, for sharing. Appreciate it. Nice read, Rex.
All right, thank you, Gene. I think there's a line right in the middle that kind of hits the right tone and note of everything. No man is entitled to the privilege of being a god, nor should he assume to be that of which he is not. There's a whole lot of truth in that one. And that second to last one as well. Seldom is life fair to the dreamers and those that seek to taste the impassioned fruit of triumph. Hey, failure comes with many things. And you fail more times than you succeed. But when you give up on the need to find that dream and act upon it, then you give up on everything, which is the general idea here. So nicely done, Frank.
Nice job.
All right, Jim. We're back on you.
Pam, that brings me to you, and this is called Completely Finally by Random Scribbler. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Solutions to you, revered terrestrial beings. Oh, sorry, let me start that over again. Salutations to you, revered terrestrial being. Welcome to our monster's castle of creeps. Don't be afraid, honored one, for we are pals here, all on one side. Take this as your home that it will soon be. Enter and sprawl cozily on the viper-laden bedding. As our treasured guest, you are here to have the pick of your choice. You have time enough to select your toxin. Strychnine, cyanide, or arsenic, what will it be, esteemed one? If you are befuddled, let us help you decide. Claws into your throat or a bite on the neck from our geniuses. These are but just some many more techniques we are skilled in. Dearest, in your joy, we will rejoice. We request you to tell us your pleasure. Hours are speeding by. We don't have the leisure. Tell us fast, darling. Would it be homicide or suicide? What is your demand? Your wish will be our command. Honey, let us know quickly in your shy voice. Don't you do that. What is with you? Why are you crying? To make you glad we are not trying? Just say the word. After all, you will soon be our flesh and blood. Weren't you the one invoking us? We got you here to make you one of us. What is ailing you now? None of us. Hi. Seems you no longer want to die. Out of here and far away you fly. Close your eyes. We are going to cast the dice. Well. You have lost your options. It is our choice to exercise any of them. Execution it is. So be it. So let go of your denial. Walk with us down the aisle. Ha, 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 ha. We will give you the kiss of death. Soon we all will be one completely and finally. Our venom is running through your breath. Now we all are one completely and finally. End poem.
Great. Wow. Reason. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Wow. Kind of creepy, huh? Something about it.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, there was part of this that my brain drifted over to Hellraiser. I think there may have been a similar feel in one of the scenes in that movie that this just took me there and I was like, oh, man. But you read it really well, Pam, and I think that it was just a great dark piece. I mean, what a thing to be offered these options. You know, it's like, wow, I think I'll pass. You know, can we do Mickey D's instead or something? You know, like, I don't know. But let's see here. You have time enough to select your toxin. Strychnine, cyanide, or arsenic, what will it be? Esteemed one, if you are befuddled, let us help you to decide. Claws into your throat or a bite on the neck from our geniuses? These are but just some. Many more techniques we are skilled in. Dearest, in your joy, we will rejoice. Like, how creepy is that? But it was really well written. And, man, I don't know, you kind of get hooked on it. It's like, yeah, where are you going? Yeah, where are you going? But then what is it with you? Why are you crying? I'd be crying. To make you glad, are we not trying? Just say the word. After all, you will soon be our flesh and blood. Wow. Yeah. A crazy piece, but really, really well done. Really well done. So thanks for sharing with us. Honestly, gosh, what a great job. And that's random. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Dan, you read it. What about you?
Oh, I enjoyed this, and I enjoyed reading it. I had read it before, but had forgotten, and so I really felt like my first laugh wasn't evil enough to do it justice, but I did have to agree with Jean that this does feel like a Hellraiser, and I say that mainly because I've written in the voice of Pinhead before, and I've written poems and narratives very similar to this one in the idea of the voice of evil being offered up. I thought Random Scribbler did a wonderful job with this horrific, creepy write on the idea of invoking the evil that cannot be controlled as the dice of fate is tossed, and the realization that the choice you have is really no longer a choice. And I like how they keep the voice of evil, keeps referring to this person as the revered one, the welcome guest, when really what they are is simply the sacrifice offered up for dinner. What is your demand? Your wishes will be our command. Honey, let us know quickly in your shy voice. I mean, and all the way through, just a wonderful dark voice offered up within tortured realms and not being able to go back from what you've released. So very well done.
Nice. Thanks, Ben. Yeah, I thought of Pinhead right away, especially when weren't you the one invoking us? We got you here to make you one of us. What is ailing you now understands none of us. And then, well, you have lost your options. It is our choice to exercise any of them. Execution it is. So be it. Let go of your denial. Walk with us down the aisle. Now, I like the conversational note to the evility and the finality that walks within it. And it did remind me of Hellraiser. So, nicely done. Random.
I was waiting any second for the hooks to come out. Like, whoa.
Yeah, well, he did roll up claws into the throat.
Yeah, you know. But I think it was the first Hellraiser where he had, like, there was four or five of them in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one that kind of hit me in, like, you know, with the vibe. But I was like, yeah, check that out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was pretty good. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is called My Nightmare by Ed Hunter. And here we go. As I stare into the candles, I watch the doorknob handle. Memories of laughter and fun until the riots come. Fire, bombs, and Cub Scouts. A life of liberty and democracy. Martin Luther King Jr., Robert F. Kennedy, Charles Miles Manson, Hare Krishnas, and LSD dancing around with their tambourines. Silhouettes of the criminally insane, an evil parasite pricking into your brain. Flesh-eating ghouls seeking a life of inhumanity. One shot in the cranium is a death-ending legacy. We live in the village of the damned, a destructive life in hand. Don't scream for your mama, because they're coming to get you, Barbara. End poem.
Ooh. Great, Eugene. Thank you very much. And Sam?
Barbara.
Ah, Barbara. That's actually my grandmother's name. Barbara Lou.
That's actually one of the first lines from the original movie, Night of the Living Dead. They're in the graveyard.
Yep.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I knew it was from a movie. I just couldn't remember which one. Yeah, I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors. A look at the raw reality of life and how horrifying it can be. A dark and creepy rite on the dam that rise to destroy life, memories of laughter and fun until the riots come, firebombs and Cub Scouts, a life of liberty and democracy, silhouettes of the criminally insane, an evil parasite picking into your brain. It's just... I like how it's a zombie rite, but it's a zombie rite that makes you think on the idea of what if some of the people of history, like Charles Manson, came back as zombies, you know. But Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's intriguing and, you know, a great dark write. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Now, come on, Pam. Manson was bad enough to first go around. I don't even want to think about him coming back as a zombie. You know, I'm just saying. Anyway.
It is a horrifying thought, that is for sure.
It is.
But would there really, you know, the thing is, though, is with zombies, would there even be any difference between good and evil? Like, if Martin Luther King and Charles Manson both came back as zombies, who all they want to do is eat brains, wouldn't they then technically both be evil?
Well, I think so. I think so, but I think Manson was bad enough to first go around. I can't imagine him being any worse than after that. Just my opinion.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know. I have, and I want you to know that very last line I'm saying, don't scream for your mama because they're coming to get you. And I wanted so bad to say Barbara. You know, I wanted to add that to it because I was like, and I said, don't do it, Jean. Don't be stupid. But yeah, they're coming to get you, Barbara. Barbara. Yes. Anyway, I know. I'm goofy. But I thought it was a great dark piece by Ed. I thought it was nicely written. Silhouettes of the criminally insane, an evil parasite pricking into your brain. Flesh-eating ghouls seeking a life of inhumanity. One shot in the cranium is a death-ending legacy. We live in the village of the damned, a destructive life in hand. Don't scream for your mama, because they're coming to get you, Barbara. Yes, I liked it. I thought I did a fine job with this. You know, a great addition to Halloween rites. Absolutely. And he said the second prompt, so I'm not sure what that second prompt was right now. I have to look.
Second prompt was...
he has it attached to his phone.
Oh, yeah. It was a picture of the writing table with the chair and the five candles.
Pam, don't be a smartass. You know? That's funny. Yeah, I didn't, you know... I got past that spot and I never forgot it was even there. Yeah. Yeah, that was it. Okay. I get it. Good job. Nice work.
You know what's funny about that note to zombies and Charles Manson? He actually did something like 500 hours with Scientology.
Yeah.
Yes. How to create zombies in 6 easy lessons. It's called hypnosis, and we can do it. Yeah, there is that quiet note that underlines this of, everybody's being brainwashed into a particular note and frame of mind. Hey, take this, take that. We'll deliver you into this and that. And, yes, we'll turn you into what we want of you instead of what you want of yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ed.
Okay, and for our last piece for the night, Rex, I'm coming to you.
All right.
And this, this is a piece by Jack Tomkovic, and it's called Killing Children. So, whenever you're ready, Rex.
Okay. Killing Children by Jack Tomkovic. If you're on Twitter arguing that killing children is an okay walk in the park thing to do because it's war, you are a messed up puppy or a baboon. If you're on Twitter arguing that you're killing children is an okay walk in the park thing to do because it's war, you are a messed up puppy or a baboon in the zoo, throwing poop at visitors and making rude hand gestures. Jesus did not say a death for a death. That's not in the book. We all sense to the depths of our marrow. What war is and how it kills the mind as well as the body, we get that. Blows flesh to bits, scatters fingers and toes across hillsides, puts brains on building roofs. Your four more dead children, do you see how puzzling and twisted that is? Peanut pretzel, pickles in brine, dill pickles, not sweet, vile to eat, you're no treat, go pound your chest, but you flunk the test. And gone. Yeah. Okay. Jean, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I get where he's coming from. I mean, war's messed up. Killing kids is never good. You know, I mean, it just, but I don't know. A death for a death that's not in the book. We all sense to the depth of our marrow what war is and how it kills the mind as well as the body. We get that. Blows flesh to bits, scatters fingers and toes across hillsides, put brains on building roofs. You're for more dead children. Do you see the, how puzzling and twisted that is? He's totally lost me with peanuts, peanut pretzels pickled in brine, dill pickles, not sweet vile to eat. I just, you know, all kind of lost in some of this. You know, we're talking about the travesty of killing children, and we're talking about, you know, blowing up other people and pickles, and I don't know. I can't really comment because I'm just, like, lost in it, you know. But thanks for sharing, Jack. Appreciate it.
Bye. Thank you, Jean. Bam.
Yeah, well, I think for the most part, it's got some strong lines in the voice spoken, and the idea of the horrors of war and the way it mm-hmm. affects people, and the way especially it affects children and you know their loved ones, and what war is and how it kills the mind as well as the body. We get that. You know, I think we all have an understanding of how horrific war can be. So, you know, just intriguing, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I think he's offering up the ease and offering the sort of a cursory violence to get what you want. It's not a way to get things done, and only leads to more cursory violence. And the fact that he's offering up is you're a messed up puppy or a baboon in the zoo throwing poop at visitors and making rude hand gestures. That idea of, there are some people out there who just want to see the world burn and don't really care because they won't ever have to see that or experience it because we're here. Except reality is what they don't know is going to bite them in the ass because I think the shit's going to hit the fan next year. Cause what they don't know is there's an estimate about 1 million terrorists have been introduced into the country over the past 2 years, and they're waiting on hold for next year. Where the back end of this, that thought with the peanut pretzels, pickle and brine, dill pickles, not sweet, violet heat, you'll know three, go pound the chest, but you flunk the test. The idea is you're so pickled in your insanity that you have nothing concrete to offer up that makes any bit of sense and is vile in its extremity. Okay. Thank you very much, Jack. And I guess we're coming back to you for the closing comment.
Yeah, we're closing, man. It's a closing argument. No, I'm only kidding. Anyway, I want to thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me. Pam, I want to thank you for spending the evening with us. Thanks to everyone who was on the board tonight or listening in. Always appreciate it. Thanks for everyone who shared their poetry, their thoughts, their like good stuff. We have 60 seconds left. I'm running out of things to say. I hope to see everyone again next Friday, and I'm sure I'll be floating around somewhere. Oh, yeah, I'll see you on Sunday, and then I'll see you Tuesday. And then I'll be here Wednesday. Yeah, and then we'll be here Friday. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Just a little bit of a whirlwind. I feel like I'm caught in a tornado, just like Pam. Whoosh. Anyway.
Yeah.
It was a great night of poetry, and thank you, everyone. And hope to see you all soon. Thanks. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Rex.
Good night,
Dan. It was fun. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.